Hello, I'm Frieda Morrison. Welcome to our Grau Garden again. And what a bonny sunny day this is. The birds are singing round about and the bees are buzzing away. You can just hear them. And after all the rain came the sun and the heat. Oh, and boysers, did that name make the plants grow? They just burst through and sprouted away. You can hear the birdies singing in the background, and I'm just wondering about looking at some of the blossoms already out. And just before I get to the greenhouse door, there's this great big, I suppose it's a tree, near shrub. I'm never sure if the difference is. David will tell me. But it's all covered in white pom-poms. I wish you could see this. I'll take a photo out for you. And it's a guelder rose again. It's one of my favourite types in the garden. But for the bonny display of white pom-poms. And I'm glad to see the hedge has come back after the severe frost. And that was a touch-and-go situation, I think. But the ruddy drum-drums are out. And all things looking bonny. So, as I said, things just sprouted a while. Just go into the greenhouse. Oh, I'm not going to be able to survive long in the greenhouse because the heat's huge. But the greenhouse especially has burst into life. Never had such a crop. I've been hearing salads with nothing. Chinese leaves, mazumas, little gem lettuce, leaves that taste of mustard. And at the beginning of June, the wild garlic leaves in the flower, and oh boy, were they good. Abdi said how much they'd enjoyed the taste. And of course, it was time, if I just can do the pathway here, across to the salads. They're looking bonny, especially the little gems salads. And I can tell you, and Dave Mitchell, that my Brussels sprouts are looking good. I've got three plants there doing well. So the experiment is working so far. I'm liable to come a cropper there. But wild sloes are looking good. It's a good doing. My rows are them. So I'm hoping to get some seeds for them and produce bonny flowers, of course. And the delphiniums are looking bonny as well. Just love them. So, and the new tatties. I'm going to have a look at them later on. And maybe, Jody says I've got to scrape back a bitty to see if they're ready. I'll wait till he arrives and see if I can find any new tatties. Because, as you can, there's nothing better than new tatties straight for the ground. This variety I like is just Chooky York, as I call it, Duke of York. So, I think it's looking bonny so far. Cross fingers. The targets, targetes, as I call them, are keeping off the green fly. No sign of the beasties. Cucumber looking bonny. Growing fine. So, Anna, nothing coming over me. Well, we're just nae long into summer. Blossoms are blooming all over the place. I love this time of year when the leaves just suddenly appear. And we're into summer, near four time. And speaking of time to join the team in their ain wee nukes. So join me new for another danner doing the garden path. Out of the greenhouse, across the grass, into our virtual studios. Welcome to Grau Radio. And here we are. Let me introduce you to the team, ready, willing and able to sort out your gardens, whether big or small, pots, windy boxes or nothing. Just enjoy the banter and the fresh air. And we've got plenty tea for armchair gardeners. So, the team. The Heath Gardener himself, a past curator at the Botanic Gardens in Embra and chair of the Open Garden Scheme, welcome David Mitchell.
Aye, Frieda, what lagery?
Aye, fine, Dave. And the number was soon sorted, and half a keen gardener, Richie Werner. Richie, you there?
Aye, how's it going? I love that intro, Frieda. I can literally feel that moist heat pouring at your greenhouse.
It was
wow,
really boiling in there. Survival time's no long, I can tell you.
I just feel sorry for the Brussels sprouts, I tell you. They boys are sweating, they like the cold.
Goodness. Abdi's on about my Brussels sprouts and my greenhouse. They said, they'll never survive. They're looking great. They're looking fantastic. Listen, Dave told me a long story about Brussels sprouts and a friend of his. Fit country did he try and grow them in again?
Oh, he was growing them in Southeast Asia, but he was lucky. He lived on the flanks of Gunung Kinabalu, and it's very cool there at high altitude. They'll not grow in the heat. I tell you, they'll just look fair, flappy and soft. They need the cold. They boys thrive in the cold.
As Jody described the last thing that he plucked out, okay, it didn't look great. It had neck rot. He said they were hanging lugget. Remember that? I love that phrase.
That's right. Well, these sprouts will end up hanging lugget.
They're nae. They're bonnie. Right, I shall move on quickly. Richie, before I leave you, fit about you. Abdi fine, family fine, enjoying the sun.
Oh, yeah, enjoying the summer sun down here and all. So that's fantastic. Right.
And the photos you sent through last night.
Everything's come out in the garden. I'll ping you up a few pics.
Oh, they are, Bonnie. You're good at your own photos. Your own photos were looking great, aye. Right, and in Lough Harbour, who's Star Cook? Come in, Claire Patterson.
Hi, Frieda. How you doing?
Are you fine yourself?
I'm fine myself. I'm envious of all this talk of sun and hot greenhouses because it's dreary here and it's drizzly and it's very, very midgy. So.
It's shameful.
Right. I know.
Okay, I'll take your mind off the weather. Fits on your menu this session.
Well, I'm being optimistic, Frieda, because I've got some picnic recipes for you. So we've got an asparagus salad, we've got some spinach phyllo pastries, carrot and brown rice salad, and to finish off, some macerated strawberries with lemon and mint.
You see, I reckon what's wrong with my cooking is I can't think of the words to describe my dishes. It's just sort of chicken and gravy. the wine that Claire described, you know, it's got spinach inside of phyllo triangles.
That's it.
You know, asparagus salad with tart lardons and croutons. You know, it just sounds bonny and appetizing. It's just a talent. She's so good at this. Okay, we're looking forward to that, Claire. Right, in Braemar, our apprentice reporter for Robert Gordon University, and now our apprentice gardener. Apprentice gardener. Welcome, Finn Nixon.
Hi, Frieda. How are you doing? I'm having to garden in short bursts right now because the midges are pretty bad up here as well, must admit.
Even in Braemar, I wouldn't have expected midges in Braemar.
Aye, mostly in the evening. Seems to be when it's damp. I think that's the conditions are like, isn't it?
They will have their jackets on, their tammies, mind you, Braemar midges. Aye, but we'll hear more about your adventures later on, Finn, because without any pressure, I underline that, no pressure for us. Finn has decided to learn more about gardens and gardening. Gardening!
That's grand, Phil. That's a grand thing to do, Finn, you know. It'll get a lot of pleasure to yourself and your mother. It's queer, like, how many young folk have turned to gardening with all this problems we've been having in life. But you've joined the biggest health club in the world now.
Aye.
It's called the Gardening Gym, and there's no monthly fees.
Aye. And you know, that's a lovely way of putting it, the biggest health club in Britain. That's just a fantastic phrase. And Finn is keen on his mother's garden up in Braemar, so we'll hear more about that later. Well done, yon Finn Nixon. Now, I need to explain the format a wee bit. We have gardening questions on email and a new record button that you can find on our Grow Radio webpage that lets you record your question and send to us. It's www.growradio.com www.growradio.com. Go into that and you'll find the record button. It's easy. So once you get the gist of this new format, we encourage you to record your questions and send them into us here. Just get into the Grow Radio webpage and see the button, record your question, press send, and it arrives here in our Grow Garden shed. Magic. Okay, we start with our recorded question. This is for Mary Herschel in Lough Gelly. Slugs and snails. Mind Mary's husband, Willie, is our esteemed guest on our sister programme, Scotch Radio, just recently. So we found out from speaking to Willie that Mary had an allotment and had garden questions. So we encouraged Mary to record her questions for this edition. This is the first thing.
Hello, it's Mary for Lough Gelly and Fife. I'd like to ask a question about these pesky wee beasties, slugs and snails. Last year, I thought I'd found the perfect solution with a new slug pellet that claimed to be organic system approved. But when I got the packet and read the ingredients, I found it was full of chemicals. And when I did a bit more research, I found that it killed off earthworms as well. So that's just creating a new problem. I've tried beer traps, which work fine in my wee lettuce patch at the back door, but it's not really a solution for the allotment. I didn't think Willie would be too happy if I used his beer supply for that. So I just wondered if maybe there was some kind of companion planting that would deter slugs, or just anything else that you could recommend that I could try. Thank you.
Right, Mary, thank you for that. Dave, over to you.
Ah, slugs and snails and puppy dog tails. They're wee scunners, these slugs and snails. I hate bother with them in my garden here. And again, the best thing I do is I take a wander around the garden just last thing at night, and I've seen me put 20 or 30 of them in a bucket. And I just put a lid in the bucket, and then when I go on for a walk, or down the back of the bank, I just throw them on the bank a bit, or 200 or 300 yards away from the house on some rough ground. I've tried on Doff's slug snail killer, which is based in ferric phosphate, and that works well. It keeps them off my vegetables in the trough, kind of salad crops and stuff, and it keeps them off my sweet peas. But that's no really the best idea, again, in an allotment. Really, the only thing you can use in that situation is a product called Nemaslug, which contains wee nematodes. And these wee guys actually seek out the slugs. It's pretty disgusting. And then they enter their body and they breed inside them and they eat them for the inside out. But you apply it with a mixture of water and a watering can, and it's active for up to 6 weeks. It's very organic. It's approved by the Soil Association. It's great stuff. That's Nemaslug. That's really about all you can do. But me, I just like picking them up and putting them in a bucket. And I get a good night when I've had over 50.
Gosh, Seth, you see, you feed birds. You've got heaps of birds in your garden. That surprises me that there's such a problem with slugs and snails.
See, here in my garden in West Edinburgh, they're a real scunner. It's nothing to get them. The wee blighters are that blooming thrivey. They're even climbing up the fence. They even climb up the fence. They come out underneath their bases and climb up the fence. I've even seen them hanging on the rough cast on the house.
Wow.
They're easy picked off there. They're just a real scunner.
And the birds in the mendrum, they didn't go after them.
Birds, you'd need the whole population of the country to eat them here, man. They're wet, warm weather. They thrive in it. And, you know, it has to be said, even picking them off isn't guaranteed to reduce the population. It's, you know, the Nemaslug's the best answer.
Weird, you see, I've got a heap of birds. I've always thought it was the birds.
The birds will help.
I've got heaps and heaps and heaps of hostas, as I call them, and I like my big blue hostas, and not a slug near them.
They've been that bad with me, Frida. I've given up growing hostas. I've given up. I just they're a waste of time with me, because these guys just come out and chew them and eat them away.
Oh, that's just sad. Okay, so Nemaslugs. Mary Nemaslugs.
The best thing I can recommend.
Right, email question this time. Question to John Williams in Carnoustie. They have no access to fertiliser. Can they use grass, David?
Well, I'm just, this question kind of puzzled me. I think what he's meaning is bulky organics, kind of like farmyard manure and stuff like that. He could use hoof and horn or bone meal. And as regards making his own compost, he can use grass. He can put grass in it, weeds, rhubarb leaves. All these things are suitable in it. But it's very important that you mix it with rougher material like household vegetable waste, herbaceous stems, autumn leaves, that you turn it regularly. And that, you know, to get it all going, you use something like Envil or Garota, which helps to encourage the more natural digestive process of bacteria and fungi. You really need to turn compost 3 to 4 times a year to keep that digestive cycle going, getting the air into it. The choice of compost bin can have, you know, make a difference too, and that really depends on what you need, how big it has to be, the amount of space you've got, the location and the budget. Some folk put something together kind of handmade. I've seen them made out of corrugated iron, wooden pallets, all posts, or you might go for a bulk product. I mean, I have one called a Thermo King hot composter, and it's made out of recycled plastic. It looks grand. It's tucked away in the bottom of the garden. You can't really see it. Or if you didn't want to spend as much as that, there's another thing called a black wall compost converter, and it's good value if you're on a budget. But okay, the three key things are a mixture of material, turning it regularly, getting it started with an activator, and if you are using one of these preformed bins, making sure the bottom of it is actually in contact with the soil.
Oh, and no rhubarb leaves either. I see that John mentions, can you use rhubarb leaves? I use rhubarb leaves.
I've put them in. You know, once it gets going, you can put them in. There's no problem with putting them in once you get it going. There's no much that you can't put in if you get it actively turning over and working properly. It's about turning it and managing it and keeping it going.
Oh, okay. Now, as I said earlier, we're in the midst of our salad days at last. Let me welcome our programme cook, the only Ian that can actually silence us, as we listen with great interest to the subject near and dear to our heart, food. Claire, give your first two recipes.
Okay, Frieda. So to start with today, I've got my asparagus salad with lardons and croutons. So if you're taking this for a picnic, I'd make the dressing up in a wee jar and just take that with you so you can pour it over so it doesn't make everything a bit soggy. So for the dressing, I make a kind of cheats Caesar dressing by shaking together in a wee jar, big splodge of mayonnaise, a wee few dribbles of rice vinegar, and a crushed clove of garlic. And you just shake that up and it's creamy and lovely and tangy and cracking. And then for the salad mix, you want a good couple of handfuls of your nice salad leaves, all those leaves you were talking about earlier in your polytunnel. If you've got pea shoots, some of them, because they're brilliant. It's great to grow those for the leaf as well as for your peas. And then some asparagus that you've just blanched until it's just tender. And then some lardons or bits of bacon fried up until they're crisp. And another thing that's great to add in there is a few croutons. So just some cubed stale bread, tossed in a wee bit of oil and a pinch of salt and popped in an oven until they're nice and crispy. So you've kind of got it all. You've got your lovely leaves, you've got your asparagus, your crispy bacon, croutons, and that lovely creamy dressing to bring it all together. And then the next one, we've got our spinach and feta phyllo triangles. So for the filling of those, you want a big bunch of washed spinach. You just wilt it with a wee bit of boiling water, and then you need to drain it really well. Squeeze it out to get rid of as much of that water as possible. And then chop it up roughly, bit of seasoning, salt and pepper, and mix in some feta cheese, a beaten egg, couple of chopped spring onions, and then you put that aside. To make the triangles, if you got your phyllo pastry sheets, if you think of it as a big sheet of paper, cut it in half down the middle, so you've got two big long thin strips, and you put a dollop of your filling on one end. Fold the bottom left corner to the top, and then you fold it along. So you basically fold it, and you end up with a triangle. It's difficult to explain, but once you start going, it's really obvious. It's really obvious, honestly.
That's what I went wrong.
Make a triangle.
I can just imagine a mess. Oh,
once you've got your triangle, honestly, there you go, and then just keep going.
This is what you keep saying.
I mean, to be fair, you could just stick it in a bit of the pastry and then fold the ends over and roll it up. So, you know, it's
fair.
There's options.
Is that just the round it up and squeeze it method?
I mean, if all else fails, then why not?
Squeeze it.
And they just need maybe 15 or 20 minutes in a 180 oven just until they're nice and golden. And they're great. You can have them warm, can have them cold, like really nice for a picnic or for a nice wee lunch.
Right. Wow. I'm going to ask you another round up and squeeze it another good variety. Right. Dave. You and I were speaking about alternative salads with alternative contents earlier on, and I add tam thum flours every now and then, again the nasturtium flours.
Aye.
Fit would you like to see us, Claire? Fit would you like to see folk grow to add to their salad dishes? Fit works for you.
So I think a big part of it is a lot of this stuff's in the garden already. It's just not things that folk think of as putting in a salad. So you've got your salad leaves and that's what goes in the salad. But if you just cast your eyes around your garden, you've got your herbs, so they can be star of the show, your parsley, chives, mint, your fennel tops, your verbena, your sorrel, like anything like that. You can use those as the bulk of your salad. And then also all those flowers that you're talking about. So things like borage, rose petals, your chive flowers. I was talking about pea shoots. We quite often, when we've got extra peas, we plant them and just use the leaves rather than trying to crop them for the vegetable. And then things like your carrot tops, your beetroot tops. It's just looking at what you've got already. You don't even have to necessarily grow special stuff, but you just have to be a bit creative about what's in your garden and think, can I eat it? Can I eat it?
Carrot tops. Yeah. Carrot tops. I've just pulled some baby carrots for the salad the next, and I usually just throw away the green straws.
No, didn't throw them away.
No? So do I just...
Didn't throw them away, things like that.
Just chop them up. Chop them up a wee bit.
Chop them up, in they go. Brilliant. The only bit is, you know, the wee bit where it meets the carrot, you maybe have to throw that away. But, you know, eat everything you can. And when you're saying about the tam thums, the leaves as well of a lot of these things, you know, your borage leaves, nasturtium leaves, like these are great things. And it's amazing how much is edible. Mm. It's great. If you get a wee book, if you're not sure, and you get them all listed, but so much in your garden is edible and can be delicious.
Oh, I know. I love the flowers.
So regarding my garden, can you eat dandelion leaves?
you can eat dandelions. Absolutely.
Can you?
Absolutely.
You can eat dandelions. And, you know, the young leaves.
The flowers, you get folk make a vegan honey from dandelion flowers.
No.
You make like a sugar syrup and you steep them and you end up with that. You know, if you're not wanting to eat honey for whatever reason, you can make a sweet spread.
Well, let me tell you. Let me tell you, Claire, I have got some vegan honey for dandelions from my pal Fee doing it at the bee cabin, and Fee said, taste it. I've got a wee jar of it. And it's lovely, absolutely delicious.
Dandelion honey.
They used to make coffee out of dandelion roots in the war.
Is that right?
Back in the Second World War, right?
We might be back to that yet. Didn't throw away your dandelions.
And the fresh leaves are nice in a salad with a vinaigrette. Yeah.
When I say, that I throw away my carrot tops, I give them to the sheep.
Oh.
If I use the carrot tops, I'm going to hear grumpy sheep.
Aye.
Which is near unusual because I've never met such a grumpy sheep, a sheep in all my life.
Oh, give them to the sheep, Frida. Did he take away their treat, honestly?
No, they're just grumpies. Just total. They're about to be sheared. There's a shearing season coming on, so they're grumpier than ever. If I tell them they're not getting the carrot tops, I've had it. They just stand and stare at you, grumpy. Anyway, Richie, do you add anything into your salads for the bairns?
Well, add anything in? I don't know, I just like my dressing. So there's one that Claire talked about last season, which was like was raspberries, and I think it was steeped in cider vinegar, a pinch of sugar, and that dressing always goes down really nice. So you leave it steeping in the fridge for a bit, right? Do you remember that one?
Yeah, that's the one. Aye.
That's a cracker, and it's so easy. That one actually is easy. But you know, they like a bit of that, or if I just like keeping it simple, a bit of cheese in there, you know, a bit of feta or a bit of parmesan, a bit of antipasti, maybe roast peppers or sun-dried tomatoes, and yeah, you name it, I'm dead happy to mix it up.
Good answer. Okay, thank you, folks. Back to the garden questions again. Another recorded question from Mary Herschel, this time about feeding plants. Okay, Mary, here's yours.
My question for you today is about feeding my vegetables. On my allotment, I grow comfrey and make comfrey tea, and sometimes add nettles to it if I can find any. However, what I wanted to know was, would comfrey tea work well with my greenhouse plants? I've got tomatoes, cucumber, aubergines, peppers, and I just wondered if it had the right nutrients for there and all. Thanks very much.
Right, thank you for the gardens, Mary. Right, David.
Aye, comfrey tea, let me see now. That's grand stuff indeed. It's environmentally sound. Why? Because it's totally natural. It's made for plant leaves. And being deep-rooted, and I mean really deep-rooted, comfrey is able to extract nutrients from deep down in the soil, nutrients that are unavailable to other plants. It's generally high in potassium, which is good for flowers and fruit set. It also contains a fair percentage of nitrogen, which is essential for strong vegetable growth. It's a wee bit lower in phosphorus, which is more important for the plant's overall physiology, especially the transportation of sugars around inside the plant and photosynthesis. In trials, comfrey tea has compared well with other products such as Grow More and Tomyrite. It's fine for your tomatoes, it's fine for your cucumbers, for your peppers, and for your aubergines. And you can, if you're able to source and put some stinging nettle foliage into the mix when you make it, that'll increase the nitrogen content a wee bit. But I mind and leave some of the stinging nettles alone, because they're a very important species for butterflies that lay their eggs on them, particularly the peacock butterfly.
Okay, I've got far too many nettles as well. And before I go to Claire, let me just clarify. I am nae a shepherdess or a shepherd, like Amanda for your Yorkshire farm with hundreds of sheep. I've got six very spoilt sheep. They're Welsh mountain sheep called Hlyn. You've got to get that Hlyn sheep. And they dinna like the sun, they go into the shed. They dinna like the rain, they go into the shed. They dinna like the wind, they go into the shed. They just stand there and glower at you, saying, stop this.
You can't. I'll tell you a queer thing about sheep that a lot of folk maybe didn't ken. You ken the sculptor Henry Moore.
Aye.
Henry Moore was fascinated with sheep, and he drew hundreds of pictures of sheep glowering at them, and they were all drawn with a biro pen, and he published a book. They're the most beautiful drawings. Sheep are, we took sheep for granted, you ken. I like sheep. They're good for all sorts of things.
They're
not
stupid.
Well, they're not daft. Well, if they're glowering at you, I'm not saying anything, like, you know.
they must have got you sussed at times. Oh, they do, because I've been
putting up. Aye, they'll hear that.
I had to kind of reorganise their gates because of the shearing thing. Well, he could have thought that I had just landed something awful in the middle of it. They just stood for an hour and looked at this gate, then looked at me, looked at the gate and looked across at me, and they said, fat potato, I wasn't there this morning. Anything you put in their little enclosure or your fields, they've got heaps of space and other rest of it, but anything. See, Geordie's in charge of the sheep mayoralist, so he's organising the money to come and shear them and that thing. But if I do anything at all, they just stand. You can see for Sean the sheep got his idea for the scripts. These sheep have got facial expressions, just like, that was not there this morning. We didn't like that.
That's that book I'm telling you about by Henry Moore, they're like living sculptures.
Absolutely, and they've got expressions.
And if you mess with our world, you're in trouble.
They didn't like it. Right, this in the middle of a gardening programme, we are discussing sheep. It just goes like that sometimes. Our programme cook, Claire Parson, has been creating her culinary wonders again. Gaze your next few summer delights. Claire?
Well, we're still on the carrots, Frieda, so once you've given your carrot tops to your sheep and kept them sweet, the rest of them, you can make the carrot itself, you can do it's a baby carrot and brown rice salad with seeds. So it's great with the first carrots when they're nice and wee, but you can always chop up the big ones if you have to. Toss your carrots all the boil. I stick a star anise in there, a couple of cardamom pods, and then you just roast those until they're tender. Obviously, that'll, depending on the size, take longer or shorter. While that's happening, you cook up some brown rice, and then you mix together the rice and the carrots, a couple of chopped up spring onions, a tablespoon of parsley, a tablespoon of fresh tarragon, and then you just dress that with a wee bit of walnut oil, a wee bit of wine vinegar, and then just finish it with a sprinkle of whatever seeds I like, pumpkin seeds or sunflower seeds or something with a wee bit of crunch. And that's great. It's really healthy. And the anise and carrots together just is perfect. Beautiful flavour. And then to finish up, we've got something sweet. We've got macerated strawberries with lemon and mint. So this is a 2-for-1 because it's a really simple pudding. It travels well. But it also gives you a bonus of leaving you with a delicious syrup that you can dilute with sparkling water. So you've got a nice refreshing drink. And I have to confess that for special occasions, I might be tempted to substitute the sparkling water for a wee bit of sparkling wine. if you're celebrating. So you start that, you make a simple syrup, cup of white sugar, cup of water, a few sprigs of mint, and just heat that up until the sugar's all dissolved, and then let it cool down completely. Then add in the zest and the juice of a lemon and your hulled strawberries. You can cut them in half if they're really big. Ours aren't this year. Ours are all totsy. And then you leave that to steep for a couple of hours or maybe even overnight if you prefer. And then to serve that, all you really need is to lift the strawberries out of the syrup and a big dollop of cream or a drizzle of cream or yogurt or any of those kind of things. And it's lovely. It's still the strawberries, wee bit of mint in the background, wee bit of lemon, that wee bit of sweetness. It's absolutely lovely.
Oh, I just love that. Claire, you would be an awful proud of me, Heatherwick. I cooked a special summer lunch for my pals Sheena Blackhall and Grace Banks, both great writers and poets and great company. And before I go any further, congratulations to Sheena on her being appointed Scots Poetry Ambassador for the Scottish Poetry Library. Great appointment. But to my creation. I marinated my chicken in soy sauce. That's as extravagant as I get soy sauce. Olive oil and lemon juice. I marinated it overnight, mixed with mushrooms. I cut the chicken into little cubes, mixed with mushrooms and onions, cooked the contents on my bowl in my wok. I was supposed to do it on the barbecue, but it fell apart during the snow. I forgot to take it outside. And it really did. It worked. And I got the recipe for Judy Beasley, Paul's George and Judy Faye, Atlanta, Georgia. Mine, they were on, David, about the hummingbirds near that
lab. That's right.
So I added the stalks of my pak choi I'm growing in the greenhouse, along with my Ain salads and new tatties. My Ain salads. Made my salad dressing. Made it. Please note, I said to myself, it was a success. They said, my both guests said, that it was a success. Maybe they were just being kind. Simple, easy, and my guests were delighted. I'm getting confidence, folks.
Well
done.
I'm flabbergasted. Frieda Morrison's discovered fusion cooking.
That's it.
That's the business, boy. That's the business. Bring more tatties with soy sauce. My goodness, soy sauce, really, that's dandy. Oh. That's dandy. I'm coming for my dinner next week.
Goodness, you know. Okay, it's maybe they haven't got lardons and croutons or crampons, whatever you want to call them.
Crampons?
Croutons and crampons. I never heard of this.
Don't eat it with those.
Right. Simmer down, because we're about to get a question from Finn. It's his first gardening questions. Okay, Finn, what's your first name?
Well, that sounds really fine, Frieda, but Rick knew I'm trying to help my mum with our garden, because I'm at home, and I'm trying to make it a more welcoming place to visit. And I was just wondering, fit flowers or plants, you guys would recommend a plant to brighten up the garden, which are also relatively easy to look after at the same time.
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do, Finn, in the garden, you know, to keep it going and get it right. And I really admire the fact that you're wanting to do something to help and support your mother in that direction. You know, I think the first thing that I would do is look for a few quick hits. And that might be something like, you know, starting to work on the patio and, you know, thinking about, you know, some plants in containers, any of the summer bedding plants, anything like that would work very well and be able to give you the results that you need. I think it's also useful to begin with to take time to understand the garden and to look at where the problems are, look at where the wet areas are, the dry areas, where it's sunny, you know, get to know where all the weedy situations are as well, you know, so that you can focus your energy in the right way to deliver the results that you want for your mother. I think you also have to take into account the budget. You don't want to be spending good money over bad. You know, you want to be taking care and buying sensibly. Don't rush out and buy all the things that are in the hot spots in the garden centres, although they want you to do that. It's better to look for bargains. I think the other thing that's good is to talk to other gardeners round about and have a look at what they're doing and see what does well with them. And, you know, I think another message is to kind of say it's a good idea to realise that it takes some time to make a good garden. It's not something that's going to happen overnight. The point is, as I said earlier, you've started, you've joined the biggest gym in the world, you know, the Green Gardening Gym. You know, it keeps you fit, it keeps you healthy, it gives pleasure to other folk. And, you know, learn from your mistakes as you go forward. And most of all, enjoy what you're doing. Because if you didn't enjoy what you're doing, the garden's no getting the best of you.
Finn, I've looked at a couple of books for you through my bookcase. And the first one is called Small Family Gardens, Step-by-Step Guide to Creating Stylish Modern Spaces, Caroline Tilston. That's a wee cracker. and has got lovely ideas for layouts for a small garden, depending on the size and bitties and putting in. Willie Duncan spoke about following your nose. You know, Willie Duncan and Fife were hero, Dave.
Aye, why?
But you have to have a little bit of shape and idea as well. But you can follow your nose later on. But the whole concept, of you saying that it's something to understand for the sunsets and sunrises. But, and this book just is absolutely ideal for a beginner. Second Dean is The First-Time Gardener, Step-by-Step Guide for Gardening Novice by Kim Wilde. Mine, Kim Wilde, she's a famous singer. Richie, you'll get Kim Wilde. Aye. Remember Kim Wilde, aye? She's a great gardener as well.
There you go.
So I've looked the twa books out for you, Finn, you can borrow in here. Can I dander through and you'll like them?
That's great.
There's another Gideon Frieda. It's called the RHS Encyclopedia of Gardening. And it's full of photographs and illustrations about how to do things, vegetables, pruning, propagation. You know, to me, it's one of the best practical gardening books out there. And if you get a copy of that, it'll be a pal to you all your days.
I've got that in my bookcase. I'll get Finn as
well. I thought you would maybe hear that. I'm off a fond of that book.
Okay, Finn, your second question. We've got time for a second question.
Aye, so as we've been saying, I'm a fairly new gardener, and I was just wondering, Fit would be your most important tips for keeping a good garden? Again, you've kind of covered that in the last question, but...
Whoa.
I think learn from your mistakes and never mind when things gone wrong, because, you know, it happens. It's part of life. It's part of gardening. And I think I'm going back to whatever you do, take pride in it and enjoy it. You know, gardening's a lifetime's journey. I'm 62 this year and, you know, I started when I was sick. And if I hear a week when I didn't learn something, I've no had a good gardening week. You'll never know it all. There's always something to learn. And there's the other thing that I love about gardening is it's a great leveller, Finn. You can meet folk that garden for all walks of life, lawyers, accountants, electricians, plumbers, doctors, bus drivers, refuse collectors, and just folk for all walks of life. And gardening makes them all equal, and they've all got stories to share. That's what I love about it more than anything.
Yeah, you're absolutely. In fact, David, speak about every day's a school day. We had a long conversation about the air circulation in my big greenhouse. Mind the other day?
Oh, aye, I tell you about that the other day, and leaving a crack of air at night in the summer to keep the condensation down and keep the it keeps the fungal disease down in the greenhouse.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't come because I'd closed all the windows at night. And, of course, the heat was building up, and I'm worried now that I've wrecked my tomatoes. I'm worried about my tomatoes. There's a lot of things to worry about in the world. Here I am sitting worrying about my tomatoes.
I used to grow tomatoes as a student, I tell you, and I grew them with my dad for years. And, you know, I think that's the other great thing about gardening. I have a friend who describes with a generation that's no been at Nelly's Elby. And by Nelly's Elby, I was lucky. My father taught me how to garden, and his father taught him. And we've kind of got a generation that's coming to it without maybe had that lead-in that we had. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I talk to a lot of folk that have got allotments. Allotments are great places to learn because everybody wants to share you and offer advice if you're new and starting and all that. It's just great. Gardening's the best cure for COVID, you'll find. It's good for your mental health, it's good for you physically, and it just, if you're feeling a wee bit down when you get out there, because you can't get out and about as normal, when you come back in the house, you'll be singing for the treetops like a lindy.
Okay. Now, just as an apt link there, recorded question again for the allotment in Loch Gelly. This is Mary Herschel again with a question about flooring currants.
My question's about other best times to cut back flowering shrubs. I had twa flowering currants in the garden. Ain I cut back in the summer just after it had flowered, and the other I didn't cut back till later in the autumn. The one I cut back early has flowered fine. The other one hasn't flowered at all this year. So obviously I did something wrong there. I also have a well-established jasmine that I cut back, or to be fair, I butchered in March this year so I could get in to paint a fence. It's still living, but it doesn't look like it's going to flower this year. So my question really is, are there any sort of general rules about when's best to cut back flowering shrubs in the garden?
Well, it's a good question, this, Frieda, because we'll be talking about it in a wee minute. But just to set it in context here, the best general rule of thumb for pruning is to study your shrub or your climber and think about what wood does it flower on. Is it this year's wood or is it last year's growth? Or is it, does it flower on older growth? Think about the overall shape and the form of the shrub, both as it is now when you're looking at it and in the future. And when you're going out to prune, don't rush at the job. Take your time. Step back and look at what you're doing from a distance every now and again. And also, don't cut off big bits and you go lathering into it and getting excited. Just mind, you can cut another bit off, but you can't add it back on. Now, to go back to our flowering currants are best pruned immediately after flowering. Be cutting them back by about two-thirds till you can see a couple of strong buds. And if you've got really old stems in the middle of it and you want to open it up a wee bit, you might want to cut them right down to the base. Keep an eye out for ugly crossing branches and deed bits and remove them and all. And as for the jasmine, don't worry about doing thing. It'll come back. I've got yin against my fence and it's been whacked back hard. I found it five times in its life. And it aye comes bolting back and it maybe misses a wee season or two's flower, but it's a bit like your sheep, except it doesn't scowl at you. It just grows twice as fast and defies and guns everywhere you didn't want it to go. So I'm sure it'll be fine.
My jasmine's gone crazy this year. It's like a creeper. It's putting up shoots all over the place.
Do you know, it's a funny thing that, Richie, but I'm noticing, I think, growth on a lot of things this year is very lush. And I think it's something to do with the fact that plants were catching up. We also had that late cold spell. Then we had early warm and we've had moisture. The weather's just been different. And I think plants have responded with more vigour as regards the amount of foliage that they're producing. I mean, I'm looking about my garden at the moment and I'm going to hit a day. I'm going to hit a fill the broom bin a couple of times in the next month. And that's unusual for me at this time of year.
Oh, why? There you go.
Right, Mary, thank you for your recorded questions and keep in contact with us because we're going to come back to you and find out if it's happening in your allotment, like we did with Steve Byrne last time. And we'll just keep in contact with folks so that we have a kind of continuation idea that goes along the episodes. Now, I have got another story. I was watching the honeybees on my wee Scotch rose recently. What a great sight. And oh, the scent of the roses. I think in the wee Scotch rose, you know, the Rosa spinosissima, it's like sweet almonds in the still air of the night during the day. And I'm still enjoying the cut comb honey. So special. The honey in the actual wax comb. And this is heather honey of mine, the very best. The beekeepers at McGerdencroft have been really busy again in the midst of the swarming season as they are. But a new occurrence happened. Let me tell you about the new occurrence. Well, new to me, as explained by the beekeepers, in particular Yvonne. They thought they were watching a hive about to swarm, right? Following us so far? With the bees gathering outside the hive, as they did, bzz, 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 bzz. Now, apparently, it was the start of the bees having a party, celebrating the new queen about to ding off on her mating flight. Have you heard of this?
Wow.
The mating flight? Anybody heard of this?
No.
Silence? No?
No.
Okay. Then Fanshawe comes back. They have a party again to celebrate her return.
Double party.
A double party.
No bad.
That's what we need, double parties. I'm not sure about mating flights, but double party. You just never can if it's going on in your garden. Well, the bees did like that. That's right. Anyway, I was wondering, and this is just putting you on the spot, Abdi. Could I ask you to come up with your own favourite did you know or did you ken about some aspect of nature that you find curious or amazing, like the bee story? Dave, Claire, Richie, Finn. Dave, can you come up with a hell lot of curious facts about worms?
Well, I'll give you an awful lot of serious facts about worms. You're just bees. I think after a lifetime of watching bees, I'm still fascinated by the fact that they can fly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because when you look at them, they're the most un-aerodynamic shape that you can think of. Mm-hmm. They've got great big bodies and wee fragile wings. And that wee insect, not only can it fly, it can fly for miles. I look at bees and I just think, bees are like Gairdnin. In fact, I think they're even deeper than Gairdnin, because I've spoken to a lot of old beekeepers, and they all tell me they ken nothing. A lifetime working with bees and you still feel as though you know nothing. Because they're just incredible insects. And, you know, when you think about the whole process of they gather nectar and they gather pollen. And, I mean, I hear some facts somewhere that are no to hand about just how hard a bee has to work to make a teaspoonful of honey.
Mm-hmm. Oh, if we had to work a lifetime of work to make half a teaspoon.
I mean, if we had to work that hard, we wouldn't be capable of it, no matter how fit we were.
Has anybody else got any observations of nature?
I've got a lot of bees this year. I didn't normally see a lot of bees, or maybe I've just still been looking for them. But I honestly, it's teeming. Absolutely teeming in the garden this year. And I don't know if it's because I got more flowers out or if I just attracted, or it's just like the right kind of conditions, but it is hoaching. Absolutely hoaching out there.
Claire, if it's your observation, anything?
The thing I love in the garden is on a sunny day, we quite often come across slow worms. And the gardener here, she tells us that they're actually very territorial. So we've named them. So we've got Stairs, who hangs out by the stairs. And we've got Acer, who hangs out by the wee kind of Japanese garden. And they also eat your slugs. So, you know, encourage the slow worms, lose the slugs.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Didn't get it.
So we go out to visit them. The kids love it. Out we go. We go to see Stairs, see how he's getting on. Go see Acer. They're like our pets. They're our pets.
I just love that, Claire, because folk just think the West Coast's all about midges and you've got slow worms, and I hadn't seen a slow worm for about 50 years.
Can I just clarify? You've got a slow worm called Stairs.
Aye, because he hangs out by the stairs.
Okay. I didn't get that about slow worm. Yeah. Okay, Finn, have you got anything for us?
Well, Ken, we were talking about slugs and moisture earlier, and apparently snails can sleep up to 3 years at a time if the climate doesn't suit them. So, kind of obviously need moist weather, but it can't be too hot. So, if it's too hot or too cold, they'll go into hibernation or estivation, which is where they sleep through the summer months.
Did you say 3 years?
Three years. So, I had a long time sleeping.
Wow.
Is he having us on? Anybody care about the slug? I mean, here's David transporting that he thinks is the bulk of the snails which he's getting in his little box. And meanwhile, unbeknownst to him, there's all these snails snoozing their heads away, snoring their heads off. And he's getting for 3 years waiting.
Well, there's evidence, good scientific evidence, Frieda, that snails and slugs can mine where they come from.
Wow.
And if you shift them, they'll come. If you put them away out of the gear and like I do, that they'll come back. Because they can't where they bite.
You see them at the side of the road hitching a lift, nothing.
So they're not just sleeping. They're sleeping and thinking about where they come from.
See, there's silence now. I can know their name. Now we're beginning to get a bitty carried away. See, we're just going to go back to practicalities. On that note, can I now invite our celebrated gardener, Mr. Dave Mitchell of that ilk, to give us his recommendations for summer shrubs, bonnie flowers and Dave.
Well, summer flowering shrubs are an amazing group of plants, Frieda. They really are. And, you know, they're like a lot of things that are amazing, good things in life. We took them for granted. They're the backbone of the garden. And when you asked me about this, I thought, oh, I could just write you a list of about 10 that I love. And then I thought, but that's getting a bit, I need to think about it differently. And I thought, I ken what the answer is. We'll put them into groups of how they flower. So the first group I'm talking about is the ones that you prune immediately after they flowered. And that's things like Deutzias, Philadelphus, Spirea, and Weigela. And out of them, if I had to choose one, I would choose Philadelphus, Avalanche, or Belle Étoile. I think Belle Étoile is a really beautiful plant. It was raised in France about 1930. It flowers from June to July. It has wonderful white flowers that have a little purple blotch in the middle that the yellow stamens show up against really well. And it smells magnificently of orange blossom. It's just glorious. And it's easy to please. It's nae fussy about what conditions it needs. And it's an absolute must for the mixed border or in the larger garden for the shrubbery. It grows to about 2 metres in height. And funnily enough, it's related to hydrangeas. And as I said, it's one of the ones that you prune immediately after flowering. So you reduce the flowering stems by 2/3, cutting them back to 2 strong buds. And in older plants, remove about 1/3 of the older stems by cutting them right down to the base. If I had to choose another one, oh, that's difficult. You could have something like Weigela Bristol Ruby or Weigela Middendorfiana, but if I was short of space, I think I would prefer to have another favourite of mine, Deutzia Scabra Codzal Pink. I'm off a fondia. It's very dependable. It grows to about 3 metres high. It has, the original species had single white flowers, but this one has double white flowers. Each of them, the blossom is flushed with a rosy pink colour on the back of the petals. It's great for bees and butterflies. It's a wee bit difficult to find. You'd probably need to order it by mail order. That's Deutzia Scabra Codzal Pink. And of course, well, Spirea arguta, the bridal wreath or bride's blossom, it's been around since about the 1880, 1884. Flowers in May. It's an absolute must to have. Let's have a look at another group. Those that you flower in early spring. So that's at the early part of the year. If I was looking for things in that group, well, Abelia cross grandiflora majori. It was raised in Italy about 1866. It has magnificent pink and white speckled flowers. It doesn't need a wee bit of shelter in the east. It's a beautiful plant. It has slightly fragrant. For years it was sold as Abelia grandiflora, but the RHS recently gave it a cultivar name. And then there's Fuchsia Mrs. Popple, you know, big reed flowers with a blue centre, hanging, pendulous. It's virtually hardy. It's been noted and respected by gardeners for over 120 years. I've even seen it as a hedge in the West Coast. Oh, you're making me think now. Hydrangea arborescens, Annabelle, came in from the United States originally, the species as early as 1786. The variety, Annabelle's much newer. It's best planted where it's given space to thrive, seen from a distance. Absolutely sensational. Huge mop heads of white flowers, almost a foot across. And then, oh, you just, I've got to do it. Viburnum plicatum, tomentosum marisii. What a name. Never mind the name. You need a bigger garden for it. Beautiful, layered, structured, architectural shrub. Lovely lace cap, creamy flowers that appear in double lows along the branches, introduced by Robert Fortune in 1844 from Japan. And it has wonderful red autumn tints. So that would be my group that you would prune in the early spring.
Can I stop you there, Dave? Can I stop you just there? Because that Viburnum placatum, I think you gave me a plant.
I did give you a plant of that many years ago.
And I've got, yeah, and it's grown beautifully along the big wall garden.
Oh, it's a...
And it's just, and one of my favourite plants.
It's an awful good thing. I remember it as a student when I first started in this industry. And it was in a plant ident, Viburnum plicatum forum tomentosum marisii. And at 17 years old, right, I looked at the name and I thought, what on earth am I going to do with my life? How am I going to mine all these names? But you do.
I need to ask another question. I may have to just wait for the third version for the next episode of Grow Radio, because we're just running out a wee bit of time here. Can I ask, is the Weigela Bristol Ruby that one that Richie didn't know the name
of? I think looking at the photograph you sent me, that's the one that was in Richie's garden. And if you like, like Weigela's, there's another one called Middendorfiana, which has beautiful yellow flowers with orange splashes on them. It can be a wee bit fussy about the frost, but you've got a good sheltered garden. I would seek that out.
One last point there is Titanus Cogia.
Cotinus cogeria, royal purple.
The smoke tree. I couldn't. I bought one at one of the garden shows in Edinburgh, and it just died. It just did not like.
Well, it's generally pretty hardy. It's had an award of garden merit, and it's also had a Scottish Garden Plant Award. I don't know why it didn't do with you. No, I've got to be honest, Rita, I've got a slight aversion to purple shrubs because I often think they leave dark holes in the landscape. It was on my list, but it wouldn't have been my choice. It's one of the things that you don't have to prune very often. If I had to choose something else, I would choose Cistus obtusifolia Thrive. It doesn't need much pruning. It comes from Spain and Portugal. It's got big, big white flowers that look like poached eggs. It flowers over a long period between June and July. I'm not a big pal of the smoke bush. So, you know, as I say, when you get something, you plant it and you lose it, don't worry about it. It's just the loss of an old friend and an opportunity to find a new one.
Have we missed it on your list? Have you got them all in?
That's them all. Done. Bang.
That's him.
Boom.
Well done, you.
Boom.
Boom. We are sitting there taking notes like fizz. Okay. That's an amazing good list.
Well, so these guys are the bones of the garden. You know, we all, I don't know, I think there's parallels between gardening and cooking because you notice that different foods and different recipes and different styles of cooking come and go very quickly, and it's the same with plants. But actually, the things that we really like are roast beef, Yorkshire pudding, tatties and veg. And you know, these guys are the roast beef, Yorkshire pudding and tatties and veg of the garden. They're solid. They're there. They're the bones. They're dependable. They do the job you want them to do. You put them in the ground, they grow, they come up, they flower, you prune them, they come up, they flower, and on they go. And they're just brilliant.
Some of us may prefer spinach and feta phyllo triangles. Or beef
that's the thing that you just fold and squat it.
Fitzy like Kenneth. Right, can I invite you now to get in contact with us, either via email, iPhone, or new super duper record button on our webpage. We are getting the questions. We would like to hear from you. Name it if you've just started. I've been there. I hope you've enjoyed our Danner doing the garden again. Maybe going off on little tributaries here and there with sheep and sleeping slugs
okay. And
all that sort of stuff. Okay, but then nip it off. Get in touch. Here's the email address to send your emails and your phone recordings. Email info@growradio.com. info@growradio.com. And you can find our record button on our webpage, www.growradio.com. And of course, mind to listen to our sister programme, Scotch Radio, www.scotchradio.com. So, on behalf of the team, Dave Mitchell, Richie Werner, Claire Patterson and Finn Nixon, and myself, Rita Morrison, enjoy your garden.